Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions. This episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. Become a patron today at patreon.com/intotheportal. Amongst those who search for the truth of myths, evidence of monsters, and animals of cryptozoology, the focus is often on the creatures where part of their mythos is based on their sheer size. The towering Sasquatch of the Pacific Northwest, the great behemoths of the depths like the Kraken, or perhaps the massive fabled living dinosaurs of a lost world hiding in the jungles of New Guinea. Massive beasts that somehow remain elusive. Hidden. But in the search for such giants of cryptozoology and paranormal research, there are often creatures also unknown to modern science that seem to have been missed. Too small in some cases to be noticed at all, perhaps. This time from within the portal, we bring you three strange stories of miniature cryptid creatures. From a mysterious miniature pixie-like monkey believed to guzzle ink in ancient China, to miniature spirit wolves of Japan, and even a tiny T-Rex encounter in the American South. Join us on Into the Portal as we discuss some lesser-known cases of miniature cryptid enigmas and the mystery of the Chinese ink monkey.
Everyone, I'm Amber A.
And I'm Andrew McKay.
Welcome back into the portal.
Your gateway to the bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's up? Welcome back, everyone. Happy to be back on the mics here for you this week and talking about something that's a little bit different, definitely different than last episode, for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of fun because I feel like there is a little bit of a synchronicity with, like, one of the topics we covered at the end of last year, hey?
Yes, there is.
If you recall.
That's actually funny. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, there totally is.
The miniature coffins.
We like miniature things, apparently, around the holidays. So we'll get to that in just a sec, but we have a little bit of housekeeping. So if Amber, if you wanted to
we do. We have a brand new patron. Welcome. What? Robin S. into the fold of our cryptid seekers.
Yes.
Has joined our crew over on Patreon. And yeah. Thank you so much, Robin.
Yes, thank you, Robin. That's
for all
amazing.
Of our supporters, we've had some new patrons here recently, and we just want to say huge thanks. It's
totally.
Just really heartwarming. And just everyone in general for their support. We've had a lot of people reaching out with lots of fun ideas for like future topics for the podcast.
For the podcast, episode ideas for the podcast.
I cannot talk to you, really.
great start.
It is a great start. But yeah, no, it's so fun because, like, really, for as little as a buck a month, we're doing ad-free episodes and early release for all of our patrons. So that's always a good thing. So if you're into that, as well as obviously bonus episodes, so Yeah. Those don't hurt.
Yeah, there's bonus content for literally the $1 tier and up. Like, so yeah, you get you do get bonus stuff. You get all of our episodes early and, like Amber said, totally ad-free. No need to skip the ads.
Although
I hope people don't, but I mean, I listen to podcasts sometimes, I do too. So we know people do. That's a thing.
We're only human.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, we do have a really cool Christmas.
Yeah.
I can't talk either today. What is with both of us?
Christmas is coming, and so we decided we're going to take a special look at the bizarre origins and folkloric sort of genesis of one of Christmas's iconic characters. So we're not going to name names. We're not saying it.
No naming names.
Lots of weird historical events, unexpected twists and turns. So there's a lot going on. Some magic involved. So actually like pretty stoked on that.
Yeah. It's really cool. So I can't wait to get into that.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
All right.
It's fun stuff.
You want to chat some miniature things?
Let's do this.
Okay. So like I said already off the top, it's a little bit of a different take on things today because I feel like it's so classical and typical for, you know, us here at Into the Portal and just people in general to kind of consider the larger cryptozoological enigmas when we're discussing paranormal things, you know, things like Sasquatch. That's a little miniature Sasquatch clattering out of the podcast studio here. I didn't know the dog was under the table. I hope you guys heard that. But yeah, we're typically always chatting about things that are massive. You know, we had Nick Cox on to talk about the marine monsters, and it's always these giant things.
Oh, the giants of Guadalcanal.
The giants of Guadalcanal. Sasquatch is a massive 10-foot tall thing. These types of creatures. So today, we wanted to do the opposite. We're bringing you three cases, all of which are completely different from one another, but all of which are small, bizarre enigmas, tiny things that defy explanation in various different ways and, you know, beg special questions in the field of cryptozoology. So that's what we're getting into today. And we're kicking things off with a curious little creature known as the Chinese ink monkey. And we had never heard about this before.
Mm-mm.
There's a great piece on it that we were inspired by in the book, The Beasts That Hide from Man by Carl Schuker.
Yeah.
Awesome book. Highly recommend you guys picking it up if you're interested in cryptozoology or like just anything that we talk about on the show. It's a really awesome resource. So the ink monkey, truly bizarre case of a creature said to exist in ancient China, a miniature primate, the smallest in history, if it did indeed exist. But what's most special about this ink monkey is that it was highly intelligent and said to be the prized possession of ancient scholars, writers, alchemists, mystics, and other peoples who had knowledge, basically. And this is the reason for the name, the ink monkey, also called in some documents as the pen monkey, which kind of makes sense as it was the pet of, like I said, scribes. You know, with scribes of the elite or the elite themselves, the powerful people who knew how to write things down, basically.
People had information to convey.
Exactly. Which makes it all the more real, potentially, but we'll get into that in a sec. But whether or not this creature existed at all is up for debate. But it really grabbed our attention because it essentially struck me as almost like a mythical pixie-like creature. That does some really interesting thing.
This is teeny, right? It's like, because when I'm picturing it, I'm picturing like, you know, like an Abu sized monkey,
right?
Kind of, you know what I mean?
Right.
With like the little hat and like, you know, maybe sitting beside on the desk.
This
is
even smaller than that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I was totally taken aback by how small this was.
Right. So this creature was said to stand no more than just a few inches tall at the most. So like, I'll get into specific sizes in a bit, but we're working with extremely small, less than like 5 inches.
A primate that's the size of a field mouse, essentially?
Roughly the size of a field mouse when fully grown, which would make them the smallest mammals ever recorded. But with capabilities that were so advanced, it made them really interesting creatures. The monkey appears in Chinese documents, ancient Chinese documents, dating back to 2000 BCE, and potentially has links even as far as ancient Greece and modern day Italy with the ancient Minoans, which is pretty bizarre. And I will reference that.
That's
later
pretty
too,
cool.
Because there's some speculation that these creatures were so prized amongst the elite that maybe there was some trade amongst the ancient world, like, because we've speculated on that too, where it's sort of like, did people have contact here and there? It's like the Chinese ink monkey would have been a highly prized commodity if there was a group of traders that managed to link up with the elite Minoans or the elite Greeks or whatever.
That's funny you talk about it as if it's a commodity and not a living entity in itself with, like, you know, because if it is a primate, it's obviously, like you said, intelligent. Exactly. And for it to be treated like this, like, it's actually quite interesting how it would have been domesticated, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
And that's what makes it sound so much like a mythical creature, like a little pixie sitting on the desk, because basically this is what was so special about these things. The ink monkey was said to have been trained to do all kinds of different tasks, from swapping out the quills of their masters, redipping the pens or quills or whatever they were using, the brushes for painting various different projects. So they were constantly swapping out the tools and knew exactly what to do. They would use the desks as a place to sleep at the end of the night, and they would be familiar with it because they knew where to go get the paper to replace it with a new sheet when their master needed a new sheet. They would even allegedly sit and turn each page as there would be a new blank slate needed for either the next page of writing or an image being drawn.
Interesting.
And then, like I said, the ink monkey was said to sleep in the desks of their owners, or sometimes even in the little brush pot itself, because they were so small, they would crawl down in amongst the little handles of the brushes or the quills and sleep there.
This definitely sounds like a Disney character.
Doesn't it? But it was said to be real. But most strange of all, and this is the second reason for the name, the ink monkey was so focused on its task that it was said to have become fixated or intoxicated in almost a hallucinogenic way with the ink itself that it was mixing and dipping for its masters. So the ink monkey developed this strange habit of drinking the leftover ink at the end of the writing session when there was any of it left. It would guzzle down the ink.
Weird.
Isn't that bizarre?
What in the heck is this ink made of?
Oh, we'll get into that in a sec.
Okay. It's like toxic substances. It
developed this taste for ink, which is strange, right? And I immediately thought, I was like you just said, it was like, okay, how are these guys not, like, yeah, what is this what made out of? Are
you poisoning yourself? It's like an oil yourself? Or something, or like, what's going on here?
Right? Most of the time, though, in the mythology, besides them drinking ink, they did indeed eat other things. It was said that the scholars and their owners would feed them peanuts and soybeans.
Okay, a little bit of protein. A little bit of protein in there, too.
And like I said already off the top, a lot of this research on the ink monkey that we're discussing today was pulled from The Beasts That Hide from Man by Carl Schuchar. So we'll toss a link maybe at the bottom of the show notes. You guys can go check that out on Amazon. Okay, so what was ink made out of in ancient China? This is kind of an important question if we believe these things to be real. I looked this up, and the majority of these ancient traditional inks in China, the traditional method was to grind a mixture of glues made from animals, basically.
Oh, yeah, like horse glue, that type of thing. Mm-hmm.
This was sort of just a direct quote here or whatever. It's like lamp black, bone black, pigment, carbon black. And I was like, what are these?
Oh, basically, is carbon like coal?
It's like soots. Yeah, it's like different basically types of... Yeah, like natural black substance, like soot, coal.
Soot makes sense.
Basically, that's the idea. But there were other... That was just for kind of the masses. That was for, like, you know, Joe Blow, anybody who wanted to get their hands on some ink. That was the bulk ink. And then there was much more specialized inks or valuable inks that were often comprised of various different extremely precious ingredients. Everything from gold, flakes of gold.
Ooh, gold dust. Ooh, cool.
Right? Yeah, it's pretty interesting, right? But to rare herbs, barks of different rare trees, sandalwoods, crushed up pearls, and other valuable items.
Whoa. So it's iridescence from the pearls. That would be cool.
Pretty
sandalwood.
Sweet.
I wonder what sandalwood would be like.
I mean, it would make it smell nice.
Or characteristic. Your ink does, it's like magic markers for ancient China.
It's like, that's actually hilarious. Yeah, the ancient scholars be like, I want my ink to smell like boysenberries or something.
What is that? Oh, Jägermeister. That's what I'm thinking of. Like that, like, black liquor with all the herbs in it and stuff.
It's very herbal and medicinally kind of.
That it tastes pretty good. Like, maybe they were. Because if these are owned by the elites, you would imagine they're probably, you know, like, obviously using elite materials.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of the idea you're thinking here?
Well, I'm just thinking, like, Well, one, it's just fascinating that there's ingredients in here that you might actually consume, like rare herbs and like barks from trees and stuff like that. That would be like maybe medicinal.
Oh, yeah.
Or in
like what's
a special
his name?
Tea or something or whatever.
Oh, what's his name? The Lucky Man?
Yeah, the Good Luck Man.
Yeah, the Good Luck Man.
Li Ching Yun.
He ate a ton of weird stuff.
He was eating herbs out the wazoo because
and roots and stuff. Barks.
it's fascinating because if the ink monkey is consuming this ink, it's obviously owned by the elite. It's probably going to be more like this type of ink here, where it's not the classic soots and things. It's a little bit fancier and maybe a little bit more like actually consumable. But it also sounds paranormal and mythological too. It's like drinking the gold dust.
Yeah.
Pretty fascinating.
They elixir life or something.
So yeah, it is really interesting because we do know that, yeah, like I said, like herbs, these rare herbs were used in cosmetics, medicines, which were also consumed by the elite of ancient China and traded as well. It's also significant to note that around the 12th century, this is when printing started to become a lot bigger business in China. So there's publishers that were creating more works, things were being commissioned in greater volume. So there was more and more inks being produced. There was more and more need for the labor of producing these works, which were whatever the best sellers
were. Like scribes and...
Yeah, exactly. So there was some speculation or suggestions, I guess, from the sources I looked at where it's like 12th century China, it almost seemed like this was the height of the ink monkey because people were so slammed with work and deadlines that these philosophers and scholars and people able to convey this information, they needed to lean on some help here. So they hired some editorial assistants, you might say. Monkeys, allegedly.
Little mini monkeys.
Allegedly, right? And there was a number of well-known scholars that claimed to have owned these creatures. One man by the name of Zhu Ji, or Zhu Zi.
Yeah, okay.
Z-H-U-X-I.
The X-I is hard.
He was a Neo-Confucian philosopher, but he was one of the first to have claimed to own this bizarre little creature, the ink monkey. And it's documented in various different records that both he himself marked down and also in other documents of his work. He lived from around 1130 to 1200 AD and basically claimed that this little monkey was his constant helper. He would always be at his desk for his most important works, always keeping his ink pot full, and that he, you know, wouldn't have been able to really produce what he did without this little creature.
That's so funny. Always keeping the pot full and taking a little off the top.
It sounds so much
one for
like
me and one for the house.
It's just one. It's a really reliable bartender. You're okay with him taking a shot here and there because you know he's going to do an okay job. But it's bizarre because we have this one at least reference here to give you guys Zhu Ji, the Confucian philosopher. But after this period around 1200 AD, it seems like these monkeys kind of started to disappear from references of being working for scholars. They kind of just disappear, which is odd because you'd seem like, and actually Carl Schuker makes a note of this in his book too, it's like you'd think that such a useful animal would be bred in captivity. It would almost be like a dog or a cat. You'd have lots of these things.
You would think,
because they were so valuable.
Unless they're quite rare, I wonder what their breeding habits were like, if they exist at all. Also, I'm kind of thinking here, don't quote me exactly because I'm trying to remember from way back in my ancient Chinese history class, but like, not ancient, sorry, it was medieval. And they did have, in and around this time, I believe, like, you know, you're saying this is about the 1100s, 1200s, that type of thing. That was when there was a lot of flourishing intellectualism and expansionism outward. And then quite shortly after that, there was a turn inward and a very severe, you could call it like a shutting of the book, so to speak. And just like it had to do with the politics of the time. They were very much like akin to how the Western world was at the precipice of, like, you know, like in the 1400s when, you know, like 1492, boom, Columbus lands and whatever. And they were very much like people think they could have definitely have made it to North America before any European did.
Yeah.
But they also did a lot of record burning and destroying in and around that time when they closed inward.
Yeah. And
I wish I could remember the exact dates. I think it was in around the 14th, 15th century they really started to shut the book.
I think you're right.
So maybe that has something to do with it, if you wanted to theorize on, like, you know, why these things started to drop off.
Yeah, and like maybe both because one, like the actual records of them, there's like almost none because they might have been destroyed.
Exactly.
And two, the people, needing them were no longer needed because the new ruling elite was tightening, you know, and definitely like Confucian scholars got the smack down pretty hard at various different stages of history. And we're not doing a Chinese history
episode here. No, I can't really comment too much on that. But I feel like, that definitely might have something to do with it.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Dug into that sort of little niche there.
That's actually a really good point, because this next part I have here is just a snippet from a 1938 book titled The Dragon Book, which was a compilation of myths, legends, oriental zoology, and other just sort of interesting things that were very piecemeal, like because of exactly what you said. And there was this researcher named E.D. Edwards. Publishes this book 1938, and was one of the only real reference points for this creature that kind of like got people back interested in it again in the Western world. So this is a quote from the book here. I pulled this because it was just a perfect snippet of what this thing is. It reads as follows. The creature is common in the northern regions and is about 5 inches long. It is endowed with an unusual instinct. Its eyes are like cornelian stones, and its hair is jet black, sleek and flexible, as soft as a pillow. It is very fond of eating thick Chinese ink, and whenever people write, it sits with folded hands and crossed legs, waiting till the writing is finished, when it drinks up the remainder of the ink, when done, it squats down as before and does not frisk about unnecessarily. end quote. So that's a translation from a much earlier text that was published in English in the 1930s of this creature, which kind of gives it this, that was the origins of this thing being almost like mythological. People were like, there's no way this could have existed. Western scholars basically denounced it outright right away. There's no evidence of modern day tarsiers is one type
of... Tarsiers.
And different small primates there used to be in a much more ancient China. But I thought that was, I just thought that was kind of interesting.
That's crazy. So the actual quote you just read is from the 1700s.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 1791, a Chinese author named Wang Ta He, who was translated in the 1840s and then subsequently found later on for this 1930s publication. But then, strangely, this creature... It that was basically it. There's a few snippets of these sort of mythological references almost to it. But people speculated that it could still be out there. So that was basically it, because it was pretty shut off for information. And even if the Chinese did admit that it was still existing, maybe we wouldn't really know in the West. But then in 1996, a news story broke that the ink monkey had been rediscovered. And this was pretty special for cryptozoology, and it kind of got the whole biological scene pretty excited.
Biological.
Or what would you, zoological? Biology. Biologists.
Cryptozoologists. Who knows?
So, April 22nd, it's published by the People's Daily newspaper, which was like, I don't know if it still is, but it's like the main...
The Daily.
Daily, one of the main state newspapers.
That sounds like a very communist newspaper.
Yeah, and it's like, I wonder what kind of things they publish in there. You just want people to believe. I mean,
I guess.
Maybe there's some legit...
If it's a state-owned news agency, then you'd imagine it's highly controlled.
You would, but then it's like, I mean, whatever. We can get into all kinds of different speculations here.
It's like the tabloids. Is it like that kind of
like
thing?
It's like the National Enquirer?
Yeah.
I mean, I did look into it. It doesn't really seem like it's like that. It's a little bit more, but obviously it's state controlled.
It's not just shocking.
No. So this news story breaks. Doesn't seem too sensationalist. It spoke of the same things we've talked about so far, like the creature's size, its characteristics, like we've discussed already, the drinking of the ink, the really big, huge, strange eyes. But most importantly, I'd mentioned that these guys had been rediscovered in the Wuyi Mountains of Fujian Province. So this is inland from the coast facing Taiwan in southern China, which is known for its mountains.
Is this Yuan country?
I don't know, actually. That's a good question.
I wonder if there's any crossover between the
relations between the Yuan and the Ink Monkey.
Because Yuan wasn't that big. Wasn't it only about 4 or 5, maybe 6 feet tall?
Yeah, it was like...
Obviously, it's way smaller, but
yeah,
like,
this is the palm of the hand of
it's
the Yuan,
like, it's
sure.
Like the... it reminds me of, like, you know, when a marsupial has a baby. Yeah. And it's like the little tiny Joey in the pouch kind of thing.
It's like they grow that much.
It's like a peanut.
These things are actually just baby Yuan. That's Amber's theory.
Yeah, living outside. I don't know.
That's why they're so hard to track down. Either way,
great theory.
This was an exciting prospect because Chinese scholars had deemed the creature extinct for centuries, but there hadn't been any official record of its existence at all. Which is
in
the weird,
West.
In the West.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's what makes this so interesting. That's why I love this type of cryptozoology, because nobody even knows in the West if it existed at all.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have a rediscovery.
Yeah.
Which in the East, which is great.
That's cool. Because like I'm assuming, because I didn't actually read this article from the People's Daily newspaper, but I'm assuming they talked about like almost like the history of this species as if like, you know, just giving an overview and then kind of being like, oh, and actually it's actually still in existence kind of thing.
Yeah, that was the vibe of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty brief little article,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, and again, like I said, like the West, they weren't really all that. Some people were excited, but pretty dubious. There was a lot of speculation about it because the previous smallest one ever found was the Rufus mouse lemur of Madagascar.
Aww.
That had been discovered in 1852, also believed to have died out, but then they had a rediscovery in 1992. So this is kind of right in around the same time of this ink monkey, like early to mid-90s rediscovery.
Those things are so cute.
This little guy, so small, weighs just over an ounce.
Okay.
About 8 inches, 8 inches tall.
Let me just say that this thing, because I just looked it up here, and it looks exactly like the really adorable, really annoying lemur from Madagascar.
Oh, yeah.
Who's just like, he's got the big eyes, he's like.
That's probably what this thing was, what he was modeled off of.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Picture that, like just over an ounce, 8 inches, and then we had the ink monkey who was coming in at like 5 inches. Like, that's so tiny. But of course, this little Madagascar creature didn't drink ink,
mm-hmm.
right? Couldn't be trained to flip pages or dip the quills or the brushes. And the same goes for other tiny primates. We have bush babies, tarsiers, which I really suck at pronouncing.
Is a bush baby a primate?
I believe so.
Really?
Unless it's a marsupial.
But it is a primate. Sorry, yeah. It's a nocturnal primate.
Right.
Yeah, they're so effing cute. You know what these remind me of?
Eyes.
They remind me of chinchillas, kind of.
They do kind of look a little
I always wanted a chinchilla when I was young.
Of course you did.
Oh, they're so fluffy.
But you can see, obviously, with these real examples, like, I hope you guys at home are, like, Googling this as well to take a look at some of these little cuties.
They're adorable.
Which, again, is, like, kind of why we wanted to do this as a subject, because how often are we talking about cryptozoology when we're like, oh, my God, it's so cute. Like, this tiny
little Pokemon.
It's actually real world Pokemon.
Yeah.
If the ink monkey was real, that's exactly what it is.
Because it doesn't have like superpowers.
It's even sleeping
it
in the little pot like a little Pokeball.
Well, exactly. Yeah, totally. Oh my God. I love this. I want this to be real so bad.
So we did. So bush babies, you pronounce the other one because I'm terrible.
Tarsiers.
Those guys.
I don't know if I'm saying that right, but
whatever. We'll roll with it. There was a side note here I wanted to add. Those ones, tarsiers,
Tartar sauce.
It all starting to sound like gibberish. They eat meat, which I didn't know.
Oh.
So the stories of the scholars feeding soybeans and peanuts and high protein vegetables, it's like maybe that wasn't enough for these little guys, and that's why they were guzzling the ink, because it was like made out of like animal hide or something for like the, I don't know.
Yeah, like the glue from the horses. Maybe that's iron rich or something.
Maybe they needed it. It was totally a nutritional thing that they're guzzling this ink.
I have no idea.
But it just sounds mythological.
All I know is I really want a bush baby.
Amber really wants a bush baby.
They're so cute.
Oh, man. The world's smallest primate before this in the 90s was the pygmy marmoset, which I'm sure is also extremely cute. This is where the confusion could have come, right? We've got these rediscoveries of these tiny little things in the 90s in completely different locations of the world. It doesn't really explain at all, especially for the ancient claims that this thing existed. But it's like, could the 1990s resurgence have just been sort of a misinterpretation? I don't know. I hope not.
You mean misinterpretation from the translation side of it?
Yeah, that they had been rediscovered in the 90s. Because obviously this makes us, like I said, think of pixies and fairies and these mythological creatures that might help out an ancient alchemist or shaman or something like that. But when it really boils down to it, it looks like the chances of the 90s rediscovery was either a hoax or a misinterpretation of or a mistranslation of the Daily News report, and it was really more of a historical reference to the folklore of the Chinese ink monkey taken as fact.
I see.
That it had indeed been rediscovered in the mountains of southern China.
Yeah,
but
that sounds more likely.
With these rediscoveries at the same time, you can be the devil's advocate and say, makes perfect sense. It's a hoax. It's a misinterpretation.
Yeah.
But here we have all these rediscoveries.
True.
So I like to believe that this little thing did indeed exist, and that maybe it could be redomesticated one day to flip the pages of an ancient scholar.
Let me just say,
a recreation of that scenario.
I'm totally 100% behind that theory. Yeah, right. Or wanting it to be real. I'm actually just looking at these pygmy marmosets.
Yeah, pygmy marmosets.
And they are really, they're different though, because they don't have the big eyes. So when you first look at them, you're like, oh, you're not nearly as cute. You kind of look like a baboon.
Right.
But when you look at it really close, it's like, okay, this thing is effing adorable. It's got like, one's getting like a toothbrush massage on its head, and he's just like, oh yes, just like loving it. Anyways, they're adorable.
So that was our first miniature cryptozoological phenomena for you guys in this episode. Now, we are veering in a very different direction for this next one, because we are going from the mountains of southern China to
the Badlands of Texas.
The Badlands and the forests of Texas in search of living miniature dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
But before we dive right into that bizarre little chestnut, we're going to take a quick ad break. Hey guys, Andrew here from Into the Portal. Do you feel as though there's something in your life holding you back, or maybe things you want to talk about? Have you thought about maybe talking with a counselor, but haven't taken that next step yet? Well, BetterHelp.com is the perfect next step. It's making it easier than ever to get on track with your mental health and connect with affordable therapists online from the convenience of your phone or laptop. It's easy to get started, and you can begin communicating with a specialized counselor within 24 hours of signing up. Plus, BetterHelp.com is safe and private, allowing you to get the help on your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist, receiving thoughtful and timely responses in return. This isn't a crisis line. BetterHelp.com offers you secure, convenient ways to access affordable online therapists, all from the comfort of your living room, office, or wherever you find yourself these days. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, so please, if you feel like you could benefit from talking with someone, check out BetterHelp.com and use the discount code PORTAL to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/PORTAL.
All right, and we're back, and we are on to our next topic of the episode, miniature dinosaurs. And like Andrew mentioned off the bat here, we're going to Texas for this one. Well, the majority of this takes place in Texas.
Yeah, there's been sightings and encounters allegedly in some other places too, mm-hmm. I guess. New Mexico, I think.
Yeah, I think New Mexico was one. And then there's also a case in Florida that to this day has no answer.
Yes.
Some video footage, very mysterious. But we're going to start off here with the story of MR, as he likes to go by. This is a witness. And it originally was taken from Lon Strickler's blog. So that's Phantoms and Monsters. He does a whole bunch of really cool, like, firsthand type account stuff. I really like looking at some of his material. But anyway, so this account actually takes place during a heat wave in the summer of 2013 in Hebronville, Texas. And this man by the name of MR claimed that a friend of his... Okay, so this is kind of a two-parter here.
Right.
Let me just give some backstory. So the first part of this story that he written to tell Lon about basically is him recounting a story from a friend of his. And so basically the friend reported seeing what they thought to be a miniature T-Rex looking dinosaur.
Okay.
And this is like a classic sighting. Apparently this thing was seen scrambling across a roadway just before 9 p.m. I think it was like 8:46 p.m. in the evening. So, yeah. Okay, so we don't have full daylight, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Apparently, though, this was like a dark creature. It was reported to be running on two legs. And that's basically kind of the gist of the details we got. However, MR goes on to say that the encounter that his friend told him about, and they thought they were going insane. They actually tried to call him on the roadside, but their phone had, like, run out of minutes, so they couldn't. So the story jogged MR's memory of an event which was, of course, very fantastical and occurred only a few months prior in this, like, what I'll call is a would-be Jurassic run-in.
Yeah, I like that phrasing.
Sure. Yeah. So MR related the following. This is a quote. Just a couple of months before, I had actually heard a creature I could only describe as a dinosaur. I had been asleep. It was night, maybe around 1 or 2 a.m. I had awoken, and just at that moment, I heard an unfamiliar screech of something running by my window. We have an AC unit in the window, so the window is basically open, he goes on to say. I heard its footsteps as it ran by, and it was heavy, whatever it was. I could hear it clearly on the ground. As it ran further away, I could hear it screech again. It was like nothing I'd ever heard in my life. It was loud, too, and I wondered if anyone else heard it or saw it, as I live in an apartment complex. I just laid there in bed, completely bewildered by what I had just heard. I questioned my sanity and if I had thought I had heard what I really heard.
Right. Makes sense.
Anyways, yeah. So what he goes on to say, when my friend saw the quote dinosaur, she was excited and wanted to tell me because of what I had heard. And then he says he's only sad he didn't get to see it too, and that they both questioned their sanity. So I'm kind of like, come on, man. Like, I would have, like, leapt out of bed myself and been like, what the heck is that?
Of course.
Go to the window, see what it is. Like, you know, that's me.
That's a no-brainer.
Unless he was paralyzed. I don't know. But, yeah, it's kind of an interesting account. But it doesn't end here. Because there was allegedly a whole spate of other reports in this area of Hebronville. And this included a town called Falfurrias, which I'm probably...
Falfurrias.
And that was only about 18 miles away, so not too far away. And then also McAllen, Texas. And it's all these very similar, sort of like 2 to 3 foot sized T-Rex shaped looking.
I'll say
lizard creatures, because T-Rex, we don't really know what T-Rex looked like. It could have been covered in feathers for all we know. So they're reporting things with, like, no feathers, darker skin. If you want to call it skin.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess it doesn't really quite get that specific. It's just a dinosaur-like entity.
Yeah. Creature. They just say the 2 feet, running on two feet. So, you know, bipedal. The idea that it isn't bigger than 3 feet. So small. And that it's dark colored. And that they describe it as what they can only say. Like, one guy said it reminded him of, like, a velociraptor. Like, you know, like the mini ones the Jurassic Park movies.
The little, like, the one, like, the, not, they're not velociraptors exactly, but the ones that attack Newman.
Yeah.
With the fan down.
Oh, yeah. Minus the fan thing.
Minus the head thing.
It's like a large looking head. Some of them, like, it's like kind of like a dome like head kind of thing.
Right. Yes.
One guy described it as not dissimilar to that of a T-Rex, but not quite the same shape either.
Okay.
So he wasn't very, like, you know, detailed in his explanation, but I don't know. So this was all in around the, like, early to mid 2010s, I'll say.
Yeah.
So, but there was another sighting earlier. It's not quite earlier. It's in the same sort of region, I guess, in 2011. So a little bit earlier than the one I just recounted.
Sure.
Was it MR?
MR.
MR. And this was another one from the Hebronville area. So this woman, she calls herself MG. And yeah,
nobody wants to give their names.
I know. Well, a lot of people just do this on his blog. And he's just like, whatever.
Fair enough.
a lot of these are small towns too, so you'd imagine if they did give their full names, they might kind of get some backlash.
That's true, actually. You'd be ostracized in different community gatherings and things like that.
Well, exactly. People, you'd be the laughingstock of the town, maybe.
Possibly.
You gotta think about that.
Gotta think ahead.
Before we started this podcast, we didn't think about that.
Well, we also just didn't care all that much.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
All right, so let's get into what she had to say. MG has her own sighting here, and this one's actually kind of interesting. So she describes how, this is a quote, "On the side of the road where I was walking one evening, I saw dust being kicked up into the air and moving along the field. Then the trail of dust was heading toward the road in front of me. I stopped walking, not knowing what may be exiting at the road. About 40 feet in front of me was what I can only describe as a little T-Rex dinosaur, about 2 to 2.5 feet in height. It didn't stop running as it dashed across the road into a smaller field. It was light reddish brown, stood on 2 legs, and had a long tail that was straight out as it ran."
Interesting.
That was all the detail she gave. That's actually a little bit more detail than the others, because, like, we didn't actually get a tail reported in the other ones, you know?
No, and obviously the colors here, like the reddish-brown color, is interesting to me. Mm. Because that, I feel like, is a little bit more leaning towards something that maybe is feathered or furred or has at least some sort of a, whatever is on the outside of it isn't the quintessential leathery skin.
A hair, you know?
A hair of some kind, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like on an elephant, like that bristly, harsh type of hair, possibly.
Or like even like a hippo.
I mean, they're do they have hair?
They don't
aquatic,
have hair, but they have like things on them.
Like we're just here speculating on all kinds of types of hair here. What about yak hair? Could it have been like yak hair? Okay, let's digress.
We didn't even get hair. All we got was light reddish brown color.
But it just seems like that would be the color of something that isn't just skin.
I'll give you this. I'll throw you a bone here. She didn't say it had leathery skin.
There you go.
All she said is that she could only describe it as a little T-Rex dinosaur. So, like, in my mind, I'm thinking, like, this is all in and around when they, like, after they've released the Jurassic Park movies, obviously. So, like, are people just referencing that?
What, you mean in, like, the newer ones, you mean? Like, in the mid-2010s?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, Jurassic Park's been around since the 90s. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm thinking, like, are they just going with the cultural zeitgeist of, like, this is what these things look like? Because, like, we don't really know. So, like, they're just, like, basing it off of stuff that we know culturally, right?
For sure.
Like, as a collective memory.
Something we have to consider.
And so that was kind of interesting. Again, Hebronville. So there was another call I'll touch on here quickly, and this was actually included in an episode of Coast to Coast in 2014. So again, in and around the same area. But the actual encounter, I don't know. This guy basically says when he was younger, doesn't give an age, doesn't give a year. He said that he claimed to have seen a T-Rex-like creature while he was dirt biking. And this was in Midland, Texas.
Okay.
However, I will say this one was reported to stand a little bit taller, about 7 feet high. And he doesn't give any other details, really.
Yeah, that's a little bit, that's more than a little bit taller.
Mm-hmm.
That's like raptor sized. Like, that's like, it's a, yeah. That's a large monster. That's a dinosaur that's going to eat you.
Well,
like a 2.5 foot tall. That would be so cool to see. Yeah. Could you imagine running into a 2.5 foot T-Rex?
Well, imagine
T-Rex?
Though. Exactly. Like, you could even, like, because obviously there's size discrepancies between male and females of the same species. So maybe he's seeing a male version versus some people are seeing female, or they're seeing younger. You know what I mean? So you could explain some of the discrepancies that way. We get in the same type of arguments when we're talking about Bigfoot sometimes.
I feel like,
and all sorts
I feel
of
like
other
for
stuff.
Once, I'm on the other side of the table here with the facial expressions that you always give me with some of these explanations. It's like, well, you know, it could easily have just been a sighting of a male versus a female living T-Rex in Texas. But
I'm not saying it's a living T-Rex, but it's something that's akin to it.
There's
clearly, people are seeing weird things in the state of Texas.
Indeed.
Dino-like things. And can we explain it as, like, maybe some type of a lizard species? This thing is seen dashing quite a bit. So maybe it just runs really fast on 2 legs, but normally is on 4 legs, like a Komodo dragon or something.
Ooh.
That's one theory I have. We can get into more theories in a second here, because there's other stuff.
Okay, continue.
We gotta. So, okay. I had one more story. So this comes from Florida. Okay, so there was a woman. This was reported really recently. This was in June of this year, so 2021.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a woman who claimed to have seen, quote, a baby dino captured in her backyard cam footage. The footage is available on the New York Post website, and we can include it in our show notes, too, for you guys.
Right.
So, as reported by the New York Post, 2 months ago, quote, Christina Ryan's security camera caught a tailed species running on its hind legs through her property. That's how they phrase it.
Yeah.
This is my description of the footage. So the footage appears to show a brief shot, this is like seconds, not even 5 seconds, of an animal running through the Palm Coast yard, Palm Coast, Florida.
Yeah.
Moving away from the camera with its head turned away and kind of ducked down.
Mm-hmm.
With possibly an object on its head or something that's bright and whitish looking.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, is it a pail or a bucket? Or maybe it's just the way the light's glaring off of it from something else. Who knows? It does not move erratically, but in a straight line. Its tail appearing high in the air with back legs extending back as it, quote, jogs past the camera. Front legs or arms not appearing in the footage, making it hard to see if the creature is walking on 2 legs or 4.
Yes. So I,
yeah.
So I would, so I agree with this description
mm-hmm.
wholeheartedly. And like Amber said, you guys, it's a really, really brief clip. Like it's three seconds or like less than three
seconds. It's like 5 seconds. I think it's 7 seconds total, but the footage, it's like 3 seconds of actual running footage.
The actual creature.
And it's all blocky. You know how like those cameras are, like it's like a baby cam.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's really blocky and really pixelated. So it's hard to tell what's actually moving and what's not.
But like you described though, so it basically, this is what it looks like, you guys. Essentially, like it runs like a chicken. It looks like the way a chicken runs with like its haunches kind of going up and down on the back.
Kind of
like
bobbing. Its legs
bobbing.
Mm-hmm.
And with the head tilted forward like a running rooster or a raptor.
Yeah.
Like would.
Totally.
It does, yeah, like it has this bizarre whitish looking thing, and we both looked at each other and said, this looks like, could this be like a cat that has like a little ice cream pail stuck on its head or something, or like whatever, but it just runs straight through as if it's on a mission. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't, it's not thrashing around like it's like, oh my God, I got something stuck on my head. Like it's not moving like an animal would if you had something stuck on your head.
Exactly. That was, yeah, yeah.
It is weird.
Because there is something that looks very blocky. And it is towards where a head would be on the creature. And it's, like, really white. And if you pause the footage and really slowly rewind it and go back and forth a few times like we did.
Yeah.
It's just, like, is that an unusual glare coming off of something? Is it just angle? Like, what's going on? Or is it just distorted because of how low lighting it was overall? And it just looks weird.
If it is just that and it is another known species of something, it's just all the perfect circumstances for it to look very much like a miniature dinosaur running bipedally on 2 legs, which would have to be perfect circumstances. And, you know, we've made wise cracks about Florida in general on this show. And I don't want to, that's not a blanket statement for the entire state.
But it's just an easy,
it's an easy target.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cause there's a lot of craziness that goes down in Florida. If there's going to be any place for this to happen, it kind of makes sense that maybe it would be in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the swamps of Florida, maybe that makes sense that there would be some sort of a unknown species of just straight up bipedal, like reptile, like rather than an actual living dinosaur per se, even though that kind of is. I mean, crocs and alligators and birds are all living dinosaurs.
I know, right? Like, what if it is like a longer legged croc?
Could you imagine
alligator, I guess.
If there was a mutation in alligators and crocodiles where all of a sudden they were walking up on land and standing up to like 10 feet tall and just cruising on 2 legs, like just like not just like a quick little I'm running at you, like just walking around.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be insane. Or what if that was, like, a new attack style, like, similar to, like, I'm picturing, you know, those lizards that, like, they'll really quickly, like, run across a pond and they, like, literally just, like, and they're just, like, on 2 legs. And they're just, like, going, I can't remember what species that is.
Oh, man, those things are
what if there was, like, a mutant giant version of that? Not even giant, like, even just this 2 to 3 foot range, like, we've been discussing here. Like,
so, I mean, well, it's all open for speculation.
Yeah, it is, because there's been no answers that have been satisfactory for Christina Ryan. So, she thinks
she's
it's something
convinced.
Dinosaur-like in origin.
Do you, what do you honestly think? Do you think that there could be, Because the other thing, I mean, I guess we could save this for the very, very, very end and all the speculation about all of these stories here today, but maybe some sort of a time, like a little,
yeah.
What did we call that in the episode?
Like a time slip or like an echo through time?
Yeah, time slip.
With the Partridge Creek Monster? Yeah.
Right.
And one thing I will say that might bolster that argument is in the original story I told where was MR had the friend with the original sighting, and she said that she wasn't the only car on the road. Like, there was another car coming from the other direction, and they didn't seem to see it like she saw it. So either they could have, and it could have been a lighting thing again, right? Because if it's at that time of day, like she was saying, then it could have been a difference of the lighting too. They might have not been able to see it. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. But they did say it was strange to them how the other car didn't seem to recognize that there was something like that running across the road. So maybe it was just like she just happened to notice the echo or whatever, an apparition of sorts.
It could have been something like that. I will say before we move on here, just because it just jogged my memory, that a few years back when I was having a conversation on Facebook with Rob Morphy, so shout out to the Kryptonaut podcast, he brought up a story that he was looking into where it was really similar to the same size type little dinosaur-like creature. I think it was New Mexico that he referenced there. But it's just so bizarre. It's like, I want to believe that there could be, because we see like these, I mean, obviously like Komodo dragons exist. Nobody believed they did until the 1930s and things like that. It's like, it wouldn't really be that out of, I don't know. And I think the fact that it's miniature cryptids we're talking about today makes it all the more believable. It's like when you're looking for a 12-foot tall Sasquatch entity, people are going to scratch their heads and be dubious of that. If you were to bring someone a sample of a living reptile that very much resembled a Jurassic Park dinosaur, but it's like 8 inches tall or something, people would be like, huh.
All right.
Bizarre.
I'll take it. Oh, yeah. And like all of these states we mentioned, like Florida, Texas, New Mexico, like New Mexico's a little bit further up in the lats, but like they're all very like on the same sort of latitudinal sort of like line orientation, especially the footage. Because obviously, yeah, like Florida extends down the peninsula, but the footage was taken just at the cusp of the peninsula, like on Palm Coast. So it kind of is a straight line to Texas across the bay there. So I don't know. There may be something to it. And I do have lots more to get into as far as like actual theories as to what these things might be. We'll save that for the end, though.
Okay.
I think we've got one more we want to touch on.
We do. Mm-hmm. So again, veering way off from where we just were. We're taking a trip. We're hopping a plane here. And every time I say something like this for transitions, I picture Raiders of the Lost Ark when he starts to go on his little journey and there's like the plane and the little dots.
Yeah.
I wish we had a graphic of us doing that here. So you guys can all picture that in your heads when we're going over to Japan.
If we had a more developed YouTube presence, we could have something like that.
We'll get there.
Maybe.
We'll get there. So, okay. We're venturing to ancient Japan to talk about the Shamnu or the Bonsai Wolf. How cool is that? So the world's smallest subspecies of Canis lupus or wolves. Really cool. Of course, Japan would lay claim to the world's smallest wolf just because it's a tiny island nation, but with some really interesting, dense, wild terrain where they've got some really interesting species of wild deer and wild hogs and things like this. But we wanted to cover this because it's a little bit more akin to like real zoology compared to like living dinosaurs in Texas per se, or the ink monkey and its sort of mythological qualities, because there were definitively two small miniature, if you will, species of wolf that used to roam the islands of Japan, the main island, also Hokkaido in the north and other areas as well. The first one, the Ezo wolf. This is not the Bonsai Wolf, but a relative. Another subspecies of Canis lupus that I wanted to reference just because it's just so tiny. This one was a bit bigger, but the Bonsai Wolf. So cool. Max length was 45 inches, and its absolute max height was 14 inches, which means, for frame of reference, it's at its absolute largest size, it would be around the same size as a North American fox, which is like a really small little dog. It's like your mom's dog, Theo, basically, which is like a little collie. But these things were vicious. and just as much an apex predator as their much larger relatives in mainland Asia.
Okay. And so you're saying like these things were definitively real at one point?
Definitively real.
Okay.
They had all kinds of different mythological associations with them because they were worshipped by ancient Aboriginal peoples of Japan, known as the how do you pronounce these guys?
Anu?
Anu, A-N-I-N-U. And they actually referred to the Shamnu as howling gods. And they were thought of as these they were deified creatures that were seen as protectors of both communities and also of like the woods in general. So they had these really sort of like, this really cool mythological association with a very real fox-sized wolf.
That sounds very akin to what we get over here in North America, right? And like the idea of, I don't know, like spirit animals, is that too like generic of a term? But like
I think it's in
just
line.
The spirits of the land being embodied in different species.
Exactly.
That type of thing.
So exactly. So I love that. There's this element of mythology linked to a real creature worshipped and depicted in stories as friendly, as these like spirit helpers. So like you said, very much like a spirit animal. But where I was kind of transitioning from this, like this belief of the Shamnu as this sort of kind of having mythological qualities to it, made me speculate, and others too, that their disappearance in and around 1900 maybe has something to do with their connection to another place. Maybe they went back to the land of the ancients rather than just being eradicated by farmers. Ooh. And the changing landscape of Japan. The last known species of this actual creature was taken to Stanford University in 1905, which proved that the animal had been alive and well into the early 1900s, when previously it thought that it had gone extinct several decades before. But then there's other records that continued to pop up as people were getting more access to Japanese translated documents that suggested that this bonsai wolf may have actually survived into the 2000s and beyond, possibly even today.
Cool.
And the reason this is a story we're including in this little trio of miniature cryptids today is that if the bonsai wolf was still alive, this would be massive for cryptozoology as a whole, and possibly having a paranormal element to it as well, because obviously Japan is a tiny place. This is a tiny species that's really interesting. If it's still there, that would be mind-blowing type thing. It would make the prospects of other creatures just so much more positive, right? Mm-hmm. Could you imagine what's out in New Guinea if we can find a miniature wolf in Japan still, everybody? Like, think about that for a second, right? In 1994, there was a perfectly preserved specimen that was discovered at a remote shrine dedicated to the wolf, known as Kokufu Machi. So I find that really cool. I would love to go to some of these wolf shrines in Japan.
Yeah.
And it sort of just spiraled from the early 1900s, where people said, nope, this wolf is gone. This ancient species has disappeared. Yet it kept popping up and almost like a spirit animal kind of would. In 1934... there was a sighting by a veterinarian named Orura Yutaka, who had been an avid photographer and believer that this thing was still alive, and he reported it to local parks authorities. Unfortunately, they couldn't track it down. Decades later, in 64, there's an amateur mountaineer and photographer named Yani Kenji. He also was an avid researcher into the Shamnu, and he reported seeing it in the early morning on Ryogami Mountain, after claiming to hear a series of blood-curdling howls that he completely did not expect.
Because nothing else should be making howls.
Nothing else should be making howls like that, because there are, allegedly, no more wolves anywhere in Japan, north, south, any of the islands, they're gone. And then again, in 1970, a journalist named Kishida Hideo claims to have taken a photo of the Shamnu, showing that it was indeed still alive. But it was a little bit hard to kind of make out exactly what it was, and official researchers didn't accept it as proof that these things did still exist. But with so much of this happening in history, and people still seeing these creatures regularly, but without the ability to prove they exist, it reminds me a lot of like a Sasquatch, where you have the indigenous peoples of North America, the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. who know that these things existed or still do.
Yeah.
They don't care what other people have to say about that speculation. And it still kind of comes and goes mm-hmm. and is seen, but nobody can seem to get definitive proof of it. So I find that really, really cool. It's like not just maybe because it's small, yeah. but maybe because.
Well, you would think the next best thing, and I'm thinking, again, going back to classic, like Bigfoot research and all that kind of stuff, like these photographers that catch these sort of like spotty shots and all that kind of thing. I would love to, like, oh man, if only they had captured some images of, say, like footprints for comparison. Ooh. That type of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, that's know, a just great kinda, point.
Yeah.
That's a really great point.
Yeah, we're missing that part of the story, though.
It's true.
Dang.
But people are still and had been still trying to hopefully gather information like that.
Mm-hmm.
The 1970s had a little bit more proof as well. There was a supposed carcass that was delivered to Japanese scientific authorities for identification. It was believed to be the body of the bonsai wolf, but it was simply never seen again. It was one of those classic situations like the big cats in Australia where there's a sample delivered, it's promptly lost.
Great.
The reason why is sort of up for speculation. There's some people that suggest that Japanese scientists are afraid to interfere with the orthodox beliefs that had already been, you know, written down in history. These things are gone. We don't want to admit that they actually are still here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very...
Like for oversight purposes,
you I mean? Guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Japanese... we don't know a ton about Japanese culture. We've never been there, but they do strike me... It strikes me as a culture that's very, like, rigid. Anyway, that basically is all I had on this miniature sort of spiritual wolf of Japan. But I wanted to include it because the speculations at the end are like, could these be feral dogs? Could they be hybrid animals that... are indeed a relative of this ancient wolf, or could they be sort of mystical mini wolves that are still living somehow for a purpose beyond just sheer survival? And maybe it is having something to do with like the balance of nature, something to that effect.
Yeah, maybe they're shapeshifters.
But there you go. I mean, they sort of just like all those accounts I just gave. They almost seem like, and again, I'm sort of just. Making it up in my head, but it's like a misty morning and on a Japanese mountain and this very kind of spiritual like wolf creature is seen but can't be captured.
Mm-hmm.
I love stuff like that. So we hope that the Shamnu, the bonsai wolf, still exists in Japan, in the mountains of wherever, anywhere it could still exist there would be great.
Yeah.
But that brings us down into
the theories.
Evidence. And just any other final thoughts and things on this trio of miniature cryptids today. So before Amber has some stuff to get into, I wanted to just kick it off by saying that, like, I'm really happy we did this because, you know, the rest of the world is always talking about the big ones. And there are, you know, there's so much legit zoological proof for miniature cryptozoological creatures that maybe we'll end up talking about a few more things like that. A couple of examples I wanted to just toss out. Are the pygmy hippo, which was legitimately discovered in the early teens, where a German explorer researcher who wasn't really well liked by a lot of his peers because he was just in it for the business of it, went to try to find these pygmy hippos a couple of times, came back unsuccessful, but on, I think, the third try, found them. And originally people were like, it's a giant hog. You got to bring back this giant hog. And then they realized it wasn't a hog at all. It was a pygmy hippo, only weighing about 400 pounds. Tiny little hippo.
Little hippo.
Pygmy elephant was another one where it's still up for debate whether or not it's an actual subspecies, but it's like 5 foot tall elephant.
Right,
yeah. So these things do exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that so much.
The minis, just like me.
I wanted to get into some of this speculation and stuff you had on some of these mini dinosaurs, though, because that is definitely a little bit more of the into the portal element of this episode.
Yeah, totally. Okay, we can start there. You know, we got our usual suspects, which would be, you know, let's go through some the misidentifications. Like, what could this have been if it was a quote-unquote normal or identified species? What could we be looking at here? And, like, you know, like, to me, like, a lot of these are kind of, like, you know, reaches. But, like, you know, you got your classic coyotes. You got lots of fox species living out in the bush of Texas. There's lots of cats, bobcats, mountain lion, cougar type things out there as well.
Jackrabbit, maybe?
None of those really fit. So, yeah, that was my next sort of thing. It was like a jackrabbit on, like, but even then, the movement is so different.
It is.
And it's not like, anyways, it's just like, it is a reach. There's lots of deer out there, too. There's actually an antelope species called the pronghorn antelope out that way.
I did not know that.
Mule deer, white-tailed deer, you know. I just, none of these again, right?
None of these really work, though, for the cam footage, anyway.
For the cam footage, but these are all not endemic to Texas, but they're all found in and around Texas, which means, obviously, yeah, they'd probably be scattered throughout the adjoining states, neighboring states.
Yeah.
The one thing I thought was kind of interesting is, like, the idea of maybe it being a whooping crane because of the two-legged factor. Those are quite tall, though. They're actually about 5 feet and doesn't really fit as far as, like, the head shapes and that type of thing. And the dark, the tail, the dark colors, the, like, just the general physiology. It is, again, a reach. So we could jump to some, like, not unidentified species, but dinosaur species that are thought to be extinct at this point, but maybe, just maybe, they're surviving in modern times, or I don't know. But there is this type of ornithopod. And that's the iguanodon that was suggested by some theorists, and these are herbivores. They did stand on two or four legs. They kind of went in between.
Okay.
They were quite a bit bigger, though, so about 10 meters in length, which means, like, they're quite a bit bigger than a human, so it's like it doesn't really fit unless it was something that... And not on top of that, it's like the fossilized remains are not found in North America. It's in England and Belgium, that neck of the woods, like, you know, UK sort of area.
But bipedal, potentially, you know. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There was another type of dinosaur, the theropod class of dinosaurs, and these are all classified as having three-toed limbs, hollow bones, they're ancestrally carnivorous. Although this isn't, like, obviously exclusive today, there's over 10,000 living species of these guys. So it ranges from, you know, like the extinct ones here, so giants like the Gigantosaurus and Tyrannosaurus. And then you also have, like, the teeny teenies, like, so a 1 foot long, it's called the Triude. Oh my gosh. Troodontid Archaeonymus, actually.
Nice. Yeah. Not bad.
And then there's obviously, like, living bird species if you're including those. So, like, you know, the bee hummingbird, it's, like, really, really tiny, 2.2 inches.
So basically what you're saying with all this evidence is, like, there's a wide range of sizes. And that there are tiny little
This theropod class of dinosaur, family of dinosaurs.
Right.
So it's like, you know, maybe there's a species in around there that might have been able to survive in its own little pocket. I'm not really going to go there, but there's this other T-Rex, kind of cool. They call it the Mini Rex. It's not actually a T-Rex, but they call it Mini Rex. And it's like basically like a miniature version of the classic T-Rex. And it's called the Susquehtyrannus hezelae. And they were small. So these are really teeny, no more than 90 pounds. And so I think it was about 3 feet. So that really fits the bill as far as like the size.
That fits the bill.
And people are saying T-Rex, T-Rex, T-Rex. So, you know, I don't know. They were around in this area, so there was actually not a full, it was like partial remains that were discovered in the 1980s in New Mexico, so not too far away from Texas there, neighboring state.
Mm-hmm.
There was a first partial skull found in the 1990s, so that's, you know, again, pretty recent. And this was kind of just a quote here from a Live Science article talking about it. It says here, the animal would have looked a bit more like the Jurassic Park velociraptors in terms of size and head height rather than its later relatives like the T-Rex.
Yeah, okay. So, that's an interesting speculation, though. That's right. That is the same.
Mm-hmm.
That is basically what these descriptions are giving.
Could it be?
Giving.
Could it be? I don't know. But are we just, like, tipping our hats to, like, you know, like, the general cultural zeitgeist we know of, like, Jurassic Park and all this kind of stuff?
I mean, it's really easy to do that, though, too. Like, mm-hmm. right? Like, and we've mentioned that in lots of stuff, like, especially with UFO phenomena.
You know,
like, when did a sighting happen in relation to what? When did Close Encounters come out? We all need to know when Close Encounters came out in relation to this sighting, right? Because that's it's totally legit.
I know.
But this next little section that you added here kind of potentially negates that, depending on how long this has been around.
Yeah. Well,
I guess.
Because there's also this, like, cryptid that's known as the Mountain Boomer. And this has been around for a little bit longer than I think.
Longer than a 1996 release of Jurassic Park in 92 or 94 or whenever that movie came out. I would like to think so.
I would hope so.
Okay.
But apparently, this is new. I just heard about this. In Texas, Big Bend National Park. Very paranormal place, let me tell you.
It is.
There's lots going on in Big Bend National Park.
Indeed.
But apparently there exists a cryptid that resembles that of what we've just been talking about, this T-Rex dinosaur thing. So mountain boomers, and this comes from a Mysterious Universe article, and it talks about how these boomers are said to stand about 5 to 7 feet tall and look exactly like a miniature T-Rex with bipedal gait, long tapered tail, powerful hind legs, and tiny forelegs tipped with sharp claws. And some reports mention large flaps of skin, and these appear above or below the head. And the creature is said to emit a low booming howl. So it almost sounds like rumbling distant thunder.
Okay, yeah.
So that's cool, hey? So
yeah.
That would definitely be in and around the camp of what we've been talking about. A little bigger, right? 5 to 7 feet tall, but...
Well, and that also kind of ties into the idea we referenced already with like time slips and stuff because, you know, national parks, I think, would be a sensible place for that to happen. You know what I mean? Where you potentially there's been a lot of, you know, like paleontologies. There's probably a lot of remains, I would imagine, in these types of areas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's yeah. The Pretty mountain cool. boomers.
I know, right?
The mountain boomers, 5 to 7 feet tall. I mean, obviously a 7 foot tall, quote unquote, miniature T-Rex is still going to be a little bit more mortifying than a 2.5 to 3 foot tall T-Rex.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. It almost reminds me of these, like, the ones that we were discussing initially, not these mountain boomers, but it reminds me more of, and I'm referencing Jurassic Park 2, right? Because I don't have any other reference really to go to, but, like, you remember those ones that looked, who did they attack and kill? It wasn't Newman. It was some other character, but they, like, they look pretty harmless, you know, and then all of a sudden more of them appear. So there was one at first, and then all of a sudden there's like a whole group of them and they're like working together.
Right.
Do you remember that scene? I kind of remember Vaguely. Which one it's from. But anyways, it might have been for one of the new ones. I don't know.
Okay.
If anyone knows that one, just get me.
Hit us up.
But anyways, yeah, there's lots of different ideas. Though. Some people have actually thrown in this idea of could be a chupacabra. So I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I mean, that's obviously a real curveball toss-in, but I guess the chupacabra did have some sort of, like, dinosaur potentially, like, qualities.
Yeah.
Like, it was hairless. Well, I mean, in some descriptions, like, it had almost kind of, like, an alien-like appearance or, like, I don't remember leathery skin or anything like that.
No.
They described as, like, the quote-unquote zeitgeist description of a dinosaur because of what people would be expecting or whatever.
I think the only reason people have suggested it is because of the behavior of animals, like pets. And there was this one person that said that because their Rottweiler was acting really strangely, he used to be like, you know, really calm and fearless, but he was hiding and whining and always was in and around when these like sightings occurred and or like the call of it or whatever. Just because of that, it's like obviously kind of more of an apex predator, so.
That would make sense. I'm going to just switch gears just back to the ink monkey for a little bit of my closing thoughts here, because I did say I was going to come back to this idea of it possibly being traded. And I didn't want to leave that out, but there was this one article I read on the Minoan settlement at Akrotiri, and there's 3,600-year-old... It's a 3,600-year-old settlement, and the frescoes and some of the artistic depictions at this site show different sizes and species of monkeys climbing and doing different things. And a couple of them are like adjacent to rooms where there would have been essentially like scholars writing things down. So it's a big leap, but there are no monkeys in this area of like where this ancient Minoan settlements were in the Mediterranean.
Mm-hmm.
There's been scholars that have done works to like have done research that suggests that they're basically depicting different species from East Africa, but it shows an ancient trade route that maybe people didn't know necessarily existed. And the sizes of like these depictions are all kind of off. The colors are even off. Like there's a blue monkey painted on one of these frescoes and done with like, tiles in some of them too. So it's kind of like an artistic interpretation of something they weren't supposed to have access to. And it just makes me wonder that maybe some of the frescoes that are knocked down that we can't actually see anymore perhaps depict a species that was even smaller or from that maybe would resemble a little bit more closely to the ink monkey. But at the very least, it's proof that these prized, strange primates would have been highly sought after by the elite in Greece, ancient Minoan culture, civilizations, and so on.
Okay.
So I think that's just kind of cool.
That is really neat.
The idea of like an ancient Chinese traveler and trader having a little crate of ink monkeys. And it just seems like a scene from a movie, you know?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
So that was my final thought on that.
Yeah.
And honestly, you guys, that's basically just bringing us kind of down to the end here. Like, of course, we want all of this to exist. We want the bonsai wolf to still roam the forests and mountains of Japan, possibly as a spirit animal of the landscape. We want the ink monkey to be hiding in the mountains of China, waiting to be rediscovered. And of course, we all want, although maybe not want to run into them, dinosaurs stalking the woods and backlands of Texas and beyond. Of course, we all want this to be true. But of course, of these three, some are more ridiculous than others potentially, but all are interesting. And the wolf and the ink monkey, a little bit more leaning towards possibly like real hard cryptozoological things that we can still discover. And maybe the bipedal dinosaurs too.
Well, you never know.
So yeah, it's, you know, I hope that we can find, these mini pixie little monkeys and get them turning pages for people once again. But that kind of brings me down to the end. I've got nothing left to say on the subject here.
This was a fun one. I really enjoyed this. And like you said already, it's like, yeah, I want some of these things to exist. I want to go visit that shrine, that wolf shrine.
We're definitely going to Japan sometime into the portals doing a trip there for sure. And we'll be able to bring you guys some really cool content.
Yeah.
So yeah, we want to know what you guys think. Which was your favorite of the three cases? Which do you think is the most likely of the three cases to still to have existed at all or to still exist in the case of the bonsai wolf?
Exactly. Yeah.
So we are on TikTok now. Just to transition into the end here.
He's got us rolling on there.
I got a couple of things posted on there.
Yeah.
It's, we're not, you
what
know.
What is it again? Is it just add into the portal or?
It's just add into the portal.
Okay.
So hit us up on TikTok and maybe I'll keep posting some stuff. And but we are always on Instagram, so Into the Portal Podcast on Instagram. Come follow us on Facebook as well, Into the Portal Podcast.
I'm gonna be posting lots of really cute monkey pictures.
Oh yeah. So there's gonna be a lot of monkey pics.
That one with the brush getting massaged on its head, he's like, oh yes. So good.
I love it. So yeah, hit us up on Facebook, and then yeah, make sure to visit our website, intotheportal.com, if you haven't checked us out on there before, and our network website, straightupstrange.com. If you guys think you might need someone to talk to, we highly encourage you to check out our sponsor, BetterHelp. You can click the link in the show notes below and get 10% off your first month. And as always, we wanted to give a massive, massive thank you to all of our Patreon supporters and our producers of Into the Portal. Adam Kellums, Nightwing, Kitsune, Jackson Greenberg, yeah, what's up? Molly the dog.
Woof, woof.
And Amber's doing all the sound effects now. So yeah, awesome crew. Thank you guys so much. Shout out again to our newest member on Patreon, Robin. And we couldn't do this without you guys. You guys keep the fires burning at Into the Portal. So yeah, thank you guys all so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And if you haven't already, leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Into the Portal, and you can get all the links to the gateway for everything Into the Portal below. So thank you guys so much, and until next time on Into the Portal,
your gateway to the bizarre.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreestyleLibre.us.
For prescription only. Safety info found at FreestyleLibre.us.